We want to welcome you to Town Hall, Oscar Grant. I am Oscar Grant. Look at your neighbor and say, I am Oscar Grant.
I am Oscar Grant.
Amen. And we want to get started before the family gets here. So we're going to open with prayer. This is True Vine Ministry, 1125 West Street. I am Pastor Zachary Carey. Amen. And you are welcome. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for an opportunity to be here this afternoon. We ask right now that you would strengthen us from the crown of our heads to the soles of our feet. We ask that you would remember this family while they are still going through the mourning process, that you would strengthen them, that you would give them endurance to run this race so that we can see this all the way to the end. We know that you are able to do great and mighty things. And you said, we have not because we have not asked. So we come asking that you would allow justice to prevail in the earth. Because we need you to give us direction. We need your wisdom and we need your guidance. These blessings we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
In the name of Allah, God, the beneficent, the merciful. I bear witness that there is but one God. And I bear witness that Moses, that Abraham, that Jesus, and that Muhammad are his servants, and I greet you. With the greeting words of peace, we say it in the Arabic language. As-salamu alaykum. How are you all this afternoon? Can we give our host, Pastor the Reverend Zach Carey, a big round of applause for the peace? Many of you know, for the last 19 months, we've gathered in predominantly the Olivet Institutional Missionary Baptist Church. In his absence, the Reverend Gordon Humphreys, who's in Chicago as we speak, which is why we're here at True Vine. But of course, True Vine is the institution that housed the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan when he addressed the community of Oakland as we responded in that largest of town hall meetings to the murder of Oscar Grant. We are certainly grateful to each and every one of you that have come here today. And I just want to lay a base for what it is we are doing on today so that we're on the same page as a family. First and foremost, we're in church, the house of God. And of course, we're taught that God is not the author of confusion, but God is the author of peace. Yes, and so when I greeted you, As-salamu alaykum, this is your first time. It's not to change your religion, maybe to give you a little language, but not to change your religion. For As-salamu alaykum is an Arabic phrase that only means peace be unto you. And it's the self-same phrase offered by Jesus whenever he had important gatherings among the disciples. It is written in the book of Colossians, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. And so today, we want to demonstrate some of our gratitude, that we are thankful, that we've come here to True Vine Missionary, True Vine Ministries, to be united under the principle of truth. We've come to True Vine Ministries and we've hosted town hall meetings to unite on the principle of freedom. We have hosted and participated over the last 19 months in town hall meetings to unite under the principle of justice. And so these principles of which we speak are so universal in scope that regardless to whether you're from San Francisco, and some are from Oakland, East or West, and many are from Berkeley and San Leandro and Hayward, and many are, well, when we are gathered together as one in peace to establish justice in the earth, then in that position and from that condition, you begin to actually see those that are willing to build a new kind of world. And so as we are opening and preparing to engage the media that's on the outside, well, why are they on the outside? They're on the outside because all great things begin on the inside. Yeah. However, it is our intention to share direct words for the press after we receive the arrival of the mother of Oscar Grant, Sister Wanda Johnson. And by the way, can we all give a big round of applause for Uncle Bobby? Today is not only a united effort to welcome our family home, but it's also an opportunity for us to ensure that the justice we went to Los Angeles to receive is in fact secure. Surely we are all aware at this point that a verdict of guilt has been determined by a Los Angeles jury. And if we can just give some context to what you saw as it compared to what we saw as we were on the ground in Los Angeles awaiting a verdict. First and foremost, as we stated from Los Angeles, this jury was convened in record speed. The judge, Robert Perry, said when we walked in on the first date, when he saw banners that said, "I am Oscar Grant," he came into the courtroom and asked about protesters that caused, they said, the change of venue to occur to Los Angeles. And he said that if this trial is interrupted by those protests, in essence, that I will stretch this thing out for 5 years. So we knew right away that we might run into some issues in the courtroom. When he talked about jury selection, he was swift to declare we can get a jury pretty quickly here. He said, "We'll call them in groups of 200, and it turns out, or groups of 50. After calling 200, turns out they sat the initial jury out of the first 50 who filled out questionnaires and came in to be interviewed. Now, if you've been watching the case over the last few days before the verdict, you discovered that on the first day of deliberation, they took a short day. And when they came back, well, there was the holiday, so they did not deliberate on Monday. On Tuesday, the jury was to have deliberated, but one of the jurors came up ill. So the jury did not meet on Tuesday. On Wednesday, what became exceedingly frustrating for us was to hear that one of the jurors who declared in the original interview by the lawyers and judge that he was going to have to leave town got to the moment in time in which he in fact or she was going to have to leave town. And so whatever deliberation they began on Friday was erased by Wednesday. On Wednesday, after reviewing a couple of court issues, they went back to deliberations with an alternate sitting in the place of the juror who left for vacation. Well, they did not sit together until late Wednesday morning. This was a new jury. They hadn't had the time yet to deliberate, and as soon as you bring new elements in, you have to start all over. They say that whatever was talked about in the original deliberation is erased by the fact that there's a new jury that has been sat. A question from the jury came before the change of jurors. That question had to do with acts of aggression that occurred that night. Does it rely on who is the provoker in an incident? The judge said, in essence, "I don't need to answer this question now because we have a new jury." Well, that new jury sat down at some point on Wednesday afternoon. They deliberated on Wednesday afternoon for maybe 3 hours. They came back in on Thursday morning, and they deliberated
on Thursday morning for maybe 3 hours. We were certainly surprised. We had an opportunity to take the family out for something to eat, to decide that the jury is going to take some time to hash this case out, because in order to get to a involuntary manslaughter charge, let me tell you what the judge instructed so we understand something of the process. To get to a involuntary manslaughter charge, all of the jurors would have had to agree that second-degree murder was off the table. That if one juror felt that this was second-degree murder, then the entire jury would have had to deliberate that point. Once they all agreed that this is not second-degree murder, they have to sign some sort of form that says that there's agreement, not guilty, on second-degree murder. Then they were to take the next level of charge, which was voluntary manslaughter. The process of deliberation should have begun again. I say should because I don't know what happened behind those closed doors. I know that it was shocking for what happened to happen so quickly. They should have considered in that moment voluntary manslaughter. And again, the rule according to the judge was, if one juror thought that this was voluntary manslaughter, then they cannot deliberate on any other principle until they have secured either guilt or not guilt on the charge of voluntary manslaughter. Then thirdly, after going through the details of these charges, which are pretty complicated, by the way, jurors are not lawyers, so it takes more time for them to deliberate because the judgments or the instructions often have to be explained. So as we are looking at these three potential charges, the jury then needs to find clarity in these very technical legal issues. But somehow, in record speed, lightning speed, we came in, we went to lunch, we didn't go to court that morning. We're assuming that this is going to take some time because they're actually supposed to deliberate. Well, I don't know what happened behind those doors, but I can tell you that when they announced the verdict, and after the verdict is announced, the judge verifies with each juror whether or not they agreed with the announcement. I can tell you that at least one of the jurors broke down and cried. So when they asked her, "Did you vote this way?" Well, maybe that was the one that wanted a second degree murder. Maybe that's the one that wanted voluntary manslaughter with weapons enhancement. So now, here we are today in the city of Oakland with a family that's still crying out for justice. Unfortunately, but not surprisingly, when we came out to see the media, some of them may as well have asked us, "What do you people want now?" So when Brother Cephas declared that the family has just taken a slap in the face, can I say this to us? They took more than a slap on the face. And he's more than free to express that. And as I shared with he and his family while we were in Los Angeles, as there was some out of concern over how people would respond in the city of Oakland if there were a not guilty verdict, were seeking to encourage the family and use their words, sometimes their names, without their permission, and attach names and words to Brother Bobby and the Sister Wanda that did not belong to them at all. Did you all realize that? I read a piece in the Chronicle in which there was an attribution to Brother Bobby that would lead one to think that he declared that those who had come to protest were pimping the community. Did you all read that in the Chronicle?
Chip Johnson.
You didn't say that to anybody, did you, Brother Maxwell?
No.
See the mischief that's made by media?
Come on, brother.
This is why we didn't let them in first. So I see some cameras flat. These are our cameras. These Brother Davey and Greg DeLong. These are our men. But the mischief that was being made in their name, that when Bobby spoke, his feeling as an uncle and a big brother over the pain that their family suffered, he has every right to not only say it, but to say it as loud as he wants to say it. Is that right? I understand there were some who feared that somehow his expression was insightful to the people here in the city of Oakland. I was blessed to talk to a radio Annie Allison show on KPFA. And on the show, I quoted the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You know he's a peaceful man, don't you? But Dr. King was asked when he went to support the movement that gave rise to the Civil Rights Movement in Montgomery, Alabama with Rosa Parks. They saw Dr. King as an outside agitator. Did you all know that?
Yes, sir.
In fact, churches gathered together and wrote a letter, published it in the newspaper, accusing Dr. King of being an outside agitator. It's as though they were saying, what is Dr. King doing coming here messing with our Negroes? Our Negroes are happy here. So Dr. King responded, I am here because injustice is here. So the question that I was asked was, what did I think about people coming into Oakland to voice their political concerns from other areas? Well, you got to be more specific, because last I checked, Oscar Grant was from Hayward. So you mean to tell me that folk can't come from Hayward and say they're upset about the murder of their friend? You mean we can't cross the Berkeley border? I thought they didn't want us to be gangs. I thought they wanted us to all get along. Are we to suggest that if I live in San Leandro, I can't speak to a murder in Oakland? If I live in San Jose, I can't speak to a murder in Oakland? If I live in Richmond, I can't speak about a murder in Oakland? No, Dr. King said, I go wherever injustice is. Right. Then he went further to say that wherever there's injustice is where I should be, by saying that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Somebody from the city government called me. What is you saying? Are you inciting? I said, well, no, sir. I was quoting the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Oh! Well, that's okay then. But you know, I could have just as well have quoted Brother Bobby. I could have just as well as quoted Tony Coleman. I could have just as well as quoted many of the activists that have been standing up demanding justice from Oscar Grant from January 1 of 2009. Nearly everyone that has spoken so responsibly is unreal.
Right, that's right.
The ability that was brought by the community to speak responsibly to the issues of the murder of Oscar Grant was what made it possible that on January the 7th, we could sit with the district attorney.
Right, right.
Because we came in civilly. We were angry. We made demands. But we were heard because we knew where we were. Davey was there with his camera, captured it on all and put it on YouTube to show you that this great fear of people demanding justice. Who's afraid of justice? I guess Johannes Mezeli is, because his behavior has been modified when he saw the hammers of justice coming his way. His language is changing when he sees the wheels of justice rolling against him. Until July the 4th, there was no statement from Johannes Mezeli to the Grant family. And by the way, what's today's date? Today is July the 10th. There's still no statement from Johannes Mezeli to the Grant family. He wrote a letter and asked his lawyer
to release that letter to the public.
Right. Right.
Ain't that plain?
And he said he would have apologized, but there were so many people hating me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Grant family never said it hated you.
Right.
And whatever threat that Johannes Mezeli felt never came to him from the Grant family. Maybe he felt like some guilty peoples of the past. You know, when you're speeding and you drive past the CHP and you see him there, let it make your heart flutter a little bit. Well, why is your heart fluttering? Because you're speeding. But now if you kill somebody, how do you feel then? When looking out on a community that's outraged because one of its own has been murdered, how do you feel then? They didn't know where to turn to seek comfort in the black community, because they looked up and here was Destry Brooks, and at one point Lynette Sweet laying on the ground on January the 14th in protest of the murder of Oscar Grant. They had BART meetings, and here were black folk that they felt they trusted. But here comes Keith Carson calling the murder of Oscar Grant what it is, and that is, in fact, an execution. I was standing by the side of Mandela on the night of January the 14th after he attempted to address a crowd, and he came in from that crowd after being hurt because of verbal exchanges. He came in and the press was there. The interviewer said, "Mr. Mayor, can you address what had happened here and what the city should do?" And the mayor responded, to his credit, "Well, I'm going to authorize OPD to investigate this homicide as it would investigate any other homicide in the city of Oakland." Do you know what the press person did? They turned the camera off. So you maybe never saw or heard Mandela say that. And when they turned the camera off, they said, "Mr. Dellums, do you really mean to use the word homicides?" I mean, listen to this now. That's the media representation of what happened to Oscar. That's why in the early days after his murder, all you heard about is what kind of thug they thought that Oscar was. They did not want for you and I to readily know and understand that he had been murdered. When the mayor fielded the question, he gave them a legal definition. Homicide doesn't declare intent. Homicide doesn't declare cause. The term homicide only means that a human being has been killed. But those of our friends in the media, we'll see them. Somerset. We'll see them in a minute. There were some who refused to acknowledge that what happened on January the 1st, 2009 was in fact murder. There were those that advocated the notion that Oscar Grant brought this on himself. And even as the reports of the court proceedings began to reveal more of the facts, some of our friends in the media chose to ignore critical facts. Those that attended the town hall, we all heard as soon as it happened what Tony Perrone said to Oscar Grant. I was sitting personally in the court proceeding that day. And when the reporters interviewed Mr. Burris and the family after it was testified that Anthony Perrone called Oscar Grant these racial epithets in horrendous terms, the press did not ask anybody about what Tony Perrone said. One member of the respectable press came to me the next day and said, "Brother Keith," that means it was a black member, he said, "Brother Keith," that's how he speaks to my team. He said, "Brother Keith, why don't you have a press conference and say to the media what Anthony Perrone said?" I said, "Brother, You and the rest were in the courtroom with me. Why do I need to waste my time having a press conference to reveal what you were there to hear? In fact, I asked them, why don't you go see Dorothy Duggan, the general manager of BART, bring her the words, and now ask her what she's going to do with Tony Perrone. Well, as it was here, so it was there. In the outcome of this case, there is surely more to be resolved that has yet to be addressed. We have to know that there's much more to achieve than an involuntary manslaughter charge. As we stated, and as you stated, we're not satisfied. Say, we're not satisfied.
We're not satisfied.
We're not satisfied. But you should know that dissatisfaction is the foundation of all change. So we're not satisfied, so we're not going to look at what we don't like and do nothing about it. If nothing else, we've learned from this case not to be an armchair revolutionary. We have to talk to folks that have political opinions about everything but do the same thing that everybody else did. I got a political opinion, but I'm not going to do anything no different. I'm going to tote the party line. I'm going to do what everybody else has done. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to go out on the club on the weekend. I might go to church on Sunday and leave the world as evil as it was before I found it. That's an armchair revolutionary. Got all the philosophies in hand. I know the meaning of socialism. I know the meaning of communism. I know the meaning of Islam. I know the meaning of Christianity. I know the meaning of Buddhism. But what change is to occur with what we know? We, in being dissatisfied, have to know that we wouldn't be where we are except we organized on that dissatisfaction and demanded that a change would occur, and it reproduced the first time in state history that a peace officer has been held over for a murder charge in the history of the state of California because you were dissatisfied. We're anxiously awaiting the arrival of our sister Wanda because there's some very special things we want to share with our friends in the media once she arrives. And so for those in the media, don't get impatient with us. The family waited 19 months. I'm sure we can wait 19 minutes for the mother of Oscar Grant to arrive. In the courtroom, it was revealed how brutally not only was Oscar treated, but also the treatment received by his friends. None of them were lawfully arrested. Therefore, all of them were unlawfully arrested. They were kept in handcuffs without explanation for 5 to 6 hours after witnessing close-range murder of their best friend. Those that were handcuffed, notably Carlos Reyes and Jackie Bryson, both of whom testified in the court procedure in Southern California. Not only were they handcuffed, but BART officers taunted them as they awaited someone to explain why they were handcuffed. So as Jackie sat handcuffed for 6 hours, I won't ask how many have been handcuffed. I'm sure too many of us have worn them at least once. But after being handcuffed for 6 hours, his arms went numb. And when the BART officers finally came to speak to him some legal jargon, they walked in after 6 hours in a cage, cuffed behind his back, and said to him, "We want you to know you're not under arrest. You're actually free to leave. If you were under arrest, we would have read you your rights." The man was there for 6 hours.
and was told he wasn't under arrest. They took the cuffs off of him, and then they read him his rights anyway. And then said to him, in essence, we're your friends. We want to help discover the truth here. We want to work together with you. They brought a soft-voiced female officer to assuage him to speak to them. But after watching his friend murdered, and after being cuffed for 6 hours, he wasn't so willing to speak. And the defense took the methodology that they would take the statements that Oscar's friends made while under torturous duress and find what they thought were contradictions in the statement. But as God would have it, every one of Oscar's friends who hit the witness stand tied up a $1 million lawyer. And no matter what he asked them, they let him know. No, we didn't want to talk to the BART police because your officer just murdered our brother. The judge had already declared, don't use the M word in testimony. But each of those young men not only courageously declared what they saw, but they actually tied up the defense attorney with his $1 million salary because he didn't think that he was dealing with men of intellect. It was apparent. He had the impression that they were some kind of thugs and out of control. But on each occasion, they tied him up and made the $1 million lawyer actually shut up. And we owe a big round of applause and gratitude to those who testified. Jamil Duran, Carlos Reyes, Jackie Bryant. These three young men. Jamil Duar, at 15 years old, shut down a $1 million lawyer twice. He first did it in the preliminary hearing when he gave Mr. Raines a new understanding of the N-word in the community. He shut him down again in the trial in Los Angeles, then 17 years old, when Mr. Raines tried to make mockery of the fact that when Jamil saw for perhaps the second time of his life the video that he captured on his own cell phone of the murder of Oscar, he hadn't looked at the video. None of these young men take to looking to the video. It's too painful for them. At 15 years old, having not seen that video, when they played the video in the courtroom, he broke down and cried, and the judge stopped the procedure, cleared the room, because he didn't want the jury impacted by the tears of a 17-year-old, highly intelligent, wonderful young man and a human being that we all are very proud of. Mr. Raines came back, Mesley's attorney, and made mockery of it. You didn't cry the last time we had court. The young man was 15 years old, witness to the murder of his friend. Cried? Well, if you watch the spirit of these young men, others that were there, Nigel Bryson, John Two, and I'm missing one.
Greer.
Michael Greer, one more.
After Sunday, June.
And Brother June. They witnessed close range the murder of their best friend. And in witnessing the murder of their best friend, they're very angry. Some have gone to court proceedings and been put out by the bailiffs. They weren't even permitted to witness the preliminary hearing beyond a few minutes. Nigel came down to Los Angeles. He didn't last 20, 30 minutes before he was excused from the court entirely. These young men are justifiably passionate and angry over the murder of their best friend. They're justifiably shooting that shot. From Mr. Rand, the attorney of Johannes Mesley, to make mockery of their pain, all of them that testified, he mocked.
That's why when we read in the newspapers the tears that were shed by Johannes Mezeli when he testified, as the family has sat every time those videos are played, members of the family and Oscar's friends are crying. They're flinching at the sound of the gunshot. They're pained every time they hear it. But Johannes Mezeli did not shed one tear in 18 months until he hit the witness stand. And anybody that was in the courtroom, as I was, would know that the man was coached. I watched his attorney look at him and say, in essence, do like me. And Mr. Mezeli, at the end of his testimony, tried to get choked up, but he just couldn't. When he cried in the courtroom, unlike Oscar's friends who are naturally pained, when they cried, the judge shut down everything and cleared the room. But when Mezeli cried, he allowed the jury to absorb minute after minute after minute. I wasn't in the room at that moment. I guess it's a good thing I wasn't. I might have did like my brother from Laney College. My brother from Laney College will take that stuff somewhere else. Because you had 19 months for that. What you're doing here now is like the song by Denise Williams, Too Much, Too Little, Too Late. That's really what that was. He was singing a song. And it was out of place, because it did not make sense that in 19 months, Johannes Mezeli had nothing to say for the murder of Oscar Grant. In fact, he had a chance to say it was an accident the first day.
Right.
He signed a document that was not allowed into the court record the first day, that could have declared the shooting to be an accident. His first lawyer took that line off the form. Said, no, don't sign this. You know how you get a ticket and the police tell you to sign the ticket? And they let you know, well, if you don't sign it, could be some issues for you, so just sign the ticket. Well, Mezeli did, like you and I often do. I wasn't speeding, I ain't signing no ticket. Mezeli refused to sign a document that would have verified that the shooting was an accident. He changed the line on the document from accident to, I believe, a discharge of the firearm.
Oh.
So he could have said in his report of January the 1st that this was an accident, but he refused to do so. In fact, he gave up the excuse that is generally given in justifiable homicides, like the ones that was given for Sean Bell, like the ones that were given for Amadou Diallo, like the ones that have been given for countless numbers of innocent men and women who an officer declares they feel threatened because I thought they were fishing to do this, that, or the other. In the case of Amadou Diallo, he pulled out a threatening pair of socks. He had a pair of socks in his hand. And when the officer declared, I thought it was a gun and killed him, that killing went down in the record book as a justifiable homicide. But when Mr. Mezeli gave the comment, I thought he had a gun excuse, in that moment, the videos had yet to be revealed. The very first person that Mr. Raines, his attorney, who came on later, hired was a video expert. That video expert gave testimony which said to the jury, don't believe your eyes, believe what I see. Pardon me, don't believe what you see, believe what I say. Those hands you see moving there are threats to the police officers. Okay, if they threaten police officers, why didn't a single police officer make a report that they were threatened? Why did the threat against the police officers have to come from a video expert?
Not a single officer testified that Oscar or any of his friends had done anything aggressive against them. Not one. The video expert testified that they were. It was so strange when Anthony Peroni came into the preliminary hearing, he said that his lawyer told him that Oscar tried to kick him. Well, where did his lawyer get that from? His lawyer got that from a video expert. By the way, they went and got the greatest experts that money could buy. These experts they hired in the police use of force and training, one of them received a $5,000 retainer. They had to pay that just to get him on board. He received $3,000 a day to give his testimony. He received $375 an hour to review the videotape and the police reports. And by the end of the day, one of those witnesses that they used to explain if Oscar and his friends were resisting arrest and if Johannes Mezzali was properly trained, one particular expert earned over $50,000 to testify. Now, do you think his testimony was inclined toward he that paid him or inclined toward justice? Well, the he that paid him before. For Mr. Rains is the attorney to the state's police union. He has defended many police abuse and use of force cases. Where this difference is, he usually wins. Usually, that lump on your head, they claim that you fell into the officer's boot. That bruise on your body, they claim that you fell into the officer's fist. In fact, some will claim that you punched their fist with your jaw. By the time the use of force experts are done, one of them was so egregious in his testimony. He was a taser expert, an advisor to the company that produces the tasers that officers use. In one testimony where they used the taser to shock somebody at UCLA, he wrote in police1.com an article that declared if you have a suspect in your hands and you fear that they are a threat, you never let them go to stand up and tase them. In fact, he was very firm about it. When it was advised to him by the university that that officer should have let the student go rather than shocking him on the ground with the taser, that he should have stood up and shot him with the taser from 4 feet away, because that kind of shot with a taser paralyzes you. If they touch you with it, it hurts, but it doesn't paralyze you. He was touching the young man with the taser, and it was on television, so it looked like torture. He's being shocked. It's like a shock treatment to the student protesters. Well, the expert said, you never let go of a suspect to stand up and tase them. In fact, he wrote into his report, police1.com, that to get up, if you think that they're a threat, to try to shoot them with a taser would be ludicrous. But in the case of Oscar Grant, he came right back in the courtroom and testified that Johannes Mezzali did the right thing by letting Oscar go, standing up, and attempting to tase him. Oh, wait a minute. At UCLA, you said that was ludicrous. That's stupid. That's silly. And you know something? He was right the first time. You don't let go of the hand of somebody you think is about to grab a gun. If you got the hand, they can't grab the gun. Make sense? If you let go of the hand, they grab the gun. Make sense? This expert was prepared. He changed his expertise in the way of his testimony to the actual opposite because it fit the police union's need in that moment. He went so far as to send a recommendation to Taser International about the use and holstering of tasers. A recommendation he could have made before, because Oscar is not the first to be killed by an officer who declared it was an accident Oscar is the seventh to be killed by an officer who declared that it was an accident. Oscar was the seventh to be killed like this. Well, my point here is that he made no recommendations to the Taser Company until the killing of Oscar Grant, but he didn't do it in January of 2009 and say, well, if this was a Taser accident, we got to do something different. He didn't make his recommendation until 2 days before his testimony, just so that he could come in that courtroom and tell the attorney, I made a recommendation. We thank the DA for questioning him about the question of when did you make such a recommendation? Because the reality was he had to write it up so it could be justified in their argument that this was somehow an accident by way of the taser being mounted in an improper position. And by the way, Oscar's last act with his camera on his cell phone was that he captured the image of Johannes Mezenbeek pointing the taser at him. It wasn't 2 minutes. Mr. Mezzoli had that taser out twice. It wasn't 2 minutes. The taser was on the opposite side of his body. It wasn't 2 minutes. And in less than 2 minutes, are we to believe that he accidentally went to the wrong holster? Look, sisters and brothers, we all know that Oscar Grant was murdered. We believe our honest eyes.
That's right.
We know that that jury that deliberated, while that is the system of things, be clear. Someone made a conscious effort to remove every black member of the jury on the first day of the effort to make a selection. Come on, they could not find one black person in L.A. County to sit on the jury. All they had to do was go to Crenshaw Boulevard. Somebody would have sat on that jury. They declared they couldn't find one black juror. So now in a city that is maybe 20-25% white, the jury came out to be 75% white. Are we saying that integration only works for white people? In other words, whites can go in an environment that's non-white and make it white. But blacks cannot go in an environment that's always been white and make it black. But the reality is there was a conscious effort made to remove every black juror from the juror pool. So when they went in to deliberate, I know you, I know me, we would have been more steadfast perhaps about second degree murder because we've been watching this happen to black people all the days of our lives. Brothers, in about 5 minutes, we're going to reset our sitting arrangement so that Brother Bobby, Wilson Rouse, Jeffrey Pete, Brother Tony Coleman, and Brother Donald Lacey, that we together are going to take a few minutes to explain to the press our gratitude and for you that have been organizing over all these months. And to make clear our knowledge that this is not a race that's over. Someone said to me the other day, the fight is not over with this verdict. Actually, it's really just begun. So don't anyone put your head down and say this is involuntary, let's go home and we can't do nothing about it. There's something that can, must, and should be done about it. And I want you to know that as a result of your steadfast activism, it activated the Department of Justice. You did. You activated the eyes of the FBI. You did. You activated the heart of the mayor of Oakland. You did. You activated the heart of our Congressperson Lee. You did. You activated the heart of the county supervisors. You did. Now, by God's grace, Oakland has a very unique position. In this city, we should expect somebody to demand justice for our people. What other city do you know that houses the Congressional Black Caucus Chair and Congressperson Barbara Lee? In addition to her mentor, who is now the mayor of Oakland, Mayor Ron Dellums. In addition to others that came out of the movement when we began to get the first opportunities to vote, and that would include County Supervisor Keith Carson and our council people, Desley Brooks, and others, you've got now enough black elected officials that if they didn't stand up for justice, then there's no need to have a black elected official. That they did what they should do. Now, if you're a white elected official, you should do the same thing. If you're a Latino elected official, you should do the same thing, because quite frankly, justice has no color. And so, sisters and brothers, our sister Wanda will be arriving here in just a moment. This is what we're going to do. We want to back up our call for justice, to let the world know that justice did not end for us in Los Angeles. We're going to organize ourselves on the steps right here in front of the church, and then we're going to hear from this delegation of persons who played various roles during the case. And of course, we want to hear from Brother Bobby and Sister Wanda. The roles that have been played have been very critical. Our brother Jeffrey P. is a longtime political activist and business owner in the city of Oakland. In fact, he's been chairman of the Black Caucus for the political process here in Oakland, California. Brother Jeffrey, come on up so everybody can see you. Wiles Jr. Come on up, Brother Wilson. Brother Wilson is a political scientist. His father is one of the first black elected officials in the state government of Northern California. We have our brother Donald Lacey of the Love Life Foundation and KPOO Radio. He's a chief advocate, extraordinaire professional comedian. Of course, we have our brother from the Oakland Coalition for the Oakland General Assembly for Justice for Oscar Grant and others. Please receive Brother Tony Coleman. To help with many others to organize wonderful gathering on 14th of Grant. And of course, we have the uncle of Oscar, who's been the bold face of reason. Hasn't this man done a wonderful job? So if you will, we're going to go right out the doors and just, can you go out with us?
Yes, sir.
And we'll just circle around, put that picture right in front of the church, and we're going to share some thoughts with the media. And you just bear witness. You don't mind bearing witness, do you?
Yes, sir.
And let them know how much you love our sister Wanda, because she'll be driving up as we're out there. So why don't we go ahead and make our way, if we can alert the media that we're on our way out the door, to come and address them right now. Thank you.